Hey, welcome to Rock Talk with Jackie Neal. I'm going to be talking with all kinds of entertainers, musicians, artists, comedians, singers, songwriters, bands, about their life, their career, their inspirations, their philosophies. I'd love for you to subscribe, like, and leave us a review. On this episode, we are talking to truly the one and only Ken Burns. He's been making documentaries about American history for more than four decades, using images to vividly recreate our struggles and successes as a nation and a people, and incorporating what is now known as the Ken Burns Effect. We'll be talking about his latest documentary on PBS, The U.S. and the Holocaust, and a new book just out called Our America, A Photographic History. And now, here's Ken Burns.
Hi.
Hey, Mr. Burns. Thank you so much. I know we have limited time, so if you don't mind, we're just going to jump in to the U.S. and the Holocaust. You've been documenting the story of America for over 40 years. Now, it's available on PBS Documentaries Prime Video Channel, Amazon, and on PBS Passport. Mr. Burns, after watching this, I really don't feel like I have any innocence left regarding this time in history. I definitely felt the burden of knowledge.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think at least the film, which is documenting the darkest moment in world history, perhaps, the extermination of 6 of the 9 million Jews in Europe, kind of consciously and deliberately and intentionally. And while the United States, you have to say, had nothing to do with it, in fact, ended the war that made sure that those 3 million Jews survived, we didn't do enough at the time when it really mattered to get people out as they were trying to flee, because we had, out of anti-immigrant sentiment, imposed this horrific, draconian immigration law that had limited quotas for those countries that had a large Jewish population. And we'd done it deliberately. There was rampant anti-Semitism in the United States in general, in the United States Congress that had passed that law, even in the Roosevelt administration, particularly in the State Department, for people who slow walked or changed the rules or moved the goalposts, making it harder. I mean, we start our film with the story of Anne Frank's father, who fled from Frankfurt, Germany to Amsterdam and was well-to-do and comfortable and fulfilled all the requirements as a German to come under the quota system. He could not get in. And you just think about it. Most Americans, particularly school children's, access to the Holocaust is first through the diary of Anne Frank. We'd like you to consider what would it be like if our country had brought the Franks in, which she might still be alive. We might be able to talk to Anne Frank. You know, and yet we know that she perished in a concentration camp.
And I had no idea that Charles Lindbergh was not the hero we were taught he was, and that America First is not a new term, and those origins are chilling.
Yeah, they are very, very chilling. In fact, he was the chief spokesman for a large anti-war group that wanted to keep the United States out of the Second World War, which had already started. And he was virulently anti-Semitic. He is still a hero for his aviation accomplishments, just as Henry Ford, a great industrialist, also promoted the worst anti-Semitic tract ever in a newspaper that had the second highest daily circulation in the United States, or the Dearborn Independent. And he was promoting this Russian hoax, anti-Semitic hoax from Russia from the 19th century called the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which, if you go online, are still the Bible of the virulent anti-Semites, and helps animate the Unite the Right at Charlottesville. Jews will not replace us. Jews will not replace us. This is an age-old story. And while it bears repeating, we don't have anything to do with the Holocaust. The ideas that created it were everywhere in the world. And the Germans themselves came and studied our Jim Crow laws to fashion the first anti-discrimination laws against the Jews in 1935. Hitler admired our extermination of Native Americans and their isolation into concentration camps, in essence, reservations. He applauded our anti-immigration law, the Johnson-Reed Act of 24. And, you know, so we've got a lot to think about, and we've got a lot to reckon with. And while I say that, there's also many, many heroic stories of people in government, not just some of the anti-Semites in the State Department, but people in the Treasury Department, John Paley, who are doing good things, ordinary American citizens, and organizations like the YMCA and the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society and the Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, names that get lost to history but are saving, at the risk of their own lives, saving tens of thousands of individuals. So we took in more people than any other sovereign nation, but we could have easily taken in 5 or 10 times as many, and therefore saved hundreds of thousands more, perhaps millions more people from the clutches of the Nazi extermination machine.
Now, what really caught me most about this documentary and all of yours, but especially this one, was the film footage. The photographs were amazing, but the film footage from that long ago, I had a really hard time wrapping my head around how vivid they were. I, you know, even thought, is this real? How is it that clean?
Well, part of our job and why it took 7 years to make, Jackie, is that this is a detective story. It's a sleuthing story. You go to archives around the world, and what happens is people have digitized and helped clean up some of the streaks and the splotches and the dirt in material like that. And some of it doesn't get cleaned up and you just play it. And we have some equally distressed footage that we couldn't do anything with. But yeah, I mean, if you take care of a piece of film, you do that. And unfortunately, a lot of the film we relied on were the home movies and the still photographs, the snapshots that German soldiers took of the atrocities they were committing. And so, you know, if it was in handed down family to family and finally exposed to the public, it's in fairly good condition. It's just depend on how it's stored. I mean, you could see a silent film from the 1900s that's perfectly restored, and it looks like it was shot yesterday, just black and white, and people are moving funny.
Speaking of the photographs, that brings me to your latest endeavor, your new book, Our America. It's a pictorial history of America, on sale, coming out November 1st. Now, these are images from nearly 200 years of America, and I'm so looking forward to it because you have got some of the best photographers and then just layman photographers who contributed.
Yeah, so this is, it starts in 1839 with the first photograph ever taken in the United States, a self-portrait of the photographer Robert Cornelius, and it comes up to more or less the present. It's one photograph per page with a minimal caption. It might say Gettysburg, 1863. And then in the back material, there's a thumbnail of each of those 250 plus photographs with a description of the photograph, the photographer, what's going on in the action, a little story behind the story. And I think you'll look at the photographs first as you would walking through an exhibition, and then you'll go back and read deeper, and some favorite photograph will cause you to thumb back and forth between the back matter and the actual plates of the film. I'm as excited about this. I've worked on it in evenings and weekends for years and years and years, and it's just a way to honor the still photograph, which is still, Jackie, the DNA of the work that we do, the fundamental. In fact, film is but, you know, 24 still photographs a second. It's just our eyes can't separate them. So we, what's called persistence of vision, and it looks like motion. But if we had a much more elaborate apparatus, we would break everything down into a still photograph.
Now, here's a question my brother John wanted me to ask you. Is there a subject matter that you would like to tackle, but you feel it just wouldn't grab the interest of the public viewing, or maybe they're not ready to receive it?
No, there's none. I've been so fortunate. I've worked with PBS my entire life. I'm not employed by them, but I submit my films to them after they're done, and they say yay and haven't yet said nay, knock on wood. And I tackle stuff without any kind of marketing consideration or that. I mean, you could be daunted by doing the Holocaust because it is such a, you can't unlearn these things. You can't unsee these things once you've seen them. And this is what human beings do, as much as it does contain the heroic material. I think if I were given 1,000 years to live, I wouldn't run out of topics in American history.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes. You are a self-professed workaholic. Now, I've read that you were driven by the grief of losing your mother to breast cancer when you were 12. With you, that grief propelled you to a life of accomplishment. And I know that you have a documentary tackling mental health issues in our young people. What can you say to people who've also lost a parent at an early age? I lost my mom at 17, but went the other way and are stuck or mired by their grief.
Yeah, a lot of it happens, and there have been times when I have been stuck and mired in my grief. My late father-in-law was an eminent psychologist, and he said, you know what you do? You wake the dead. Mm. You make Abraham Lincoln and Jackie Robinson come alive. Who do you think you're really trying to wake up? And he said, I bet you as a little boy, you blew out the candles on your birthday cake wishing your mom would come back. I said, yeah, how'd you know? And he said, I bet you can't remember. You're never present on the date that you died. It's always coming up and always receding. And I said, yes, that's true. I've always wondered why that is. He says, that's the magical thinking of an 11-year-old. She died when I was actually 11, a couple months short of my 12th birthday. And it was so profound. And I think what I've done, and I feel very lucky, is to be able to turn that. But I would say to everybody that there's three things. This won't last. It might get worse, but probably will get better. get help from others, and be kind to yourself. The last one is the hardest thing to do. And that's how we move forward. That's how we deal with it. Life is a complicated tragedy, and none of us get out of it alive, but we are obligated to do something, right? We're not sitting in a fetal position.
Right.
You know, some of us are fired by that grief, as you say, at times. You don't have to write a symphony. You don't have to write a book. You don't have to cure this disease, but you can tend a garden. You can raise a child. And I think the people who often are labeled and shunned because they supposedly suffer from mental illness, and we've gotten so much better at it, they actually have a sensitivity and a humanity that is just waiting to be expressed. And the more we understand and embrace them and love them and help them, not just as individuals, but as a country, with our policies as well as our words, then we come closer to having a better society.
Mr. Ken Burns, thank you. I could break out the good scotch and take a deep dive, but I know you've got to go. Thank you very much for your time.
And next time, good scotch.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Rock Talk with Jackie Neal. Feel free to like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review.